Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries plus napkins plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
We all want to travel faster than light. We all want to go to another part of the universe at another time instantly. But so far, we still can't do it. Life sucks. And then you die. This on? Hello?
We're all science people.
Science!
Exactly.
We know it's a good idea because it's lasted.
We can teach kids and they get it.
There's chemistry in here. There's biology in here.
It's in whiskey. It's in ice cream. It's in who you fall in love with.
That's the recipe for success.
We can make the world better for everybody.
Starting now.
Greetings, greetings, greetings. Welcome to Science Rules. I'm your host, Bill Nye, and this is the show where, dare I say it, science rules. It's a call-in show. So if you want to be on the show, call in. If you see what I'm driving at there, make sure to check my social handles. You know, the kids use the gram, the Twitter, the booking of face. And we will get your question on the air. And as always, you can send your questions or comments to askbillnye.com. Askbillnye.com, all together, one wordified. And I am once again joined, of course, I know you're all as excited as I am, by science writer, editor, and I'll just tell you, dear friend,
oh, Bill.
Corey S. Powell. Greetings, Corey.
Oh, hello, Bill. Always good to be here. You know, I was thinking it would be so cool if Albert Einstein were still around and we could have him on the show. But last I checked, he's not available. But what we do have is somebody who's one of Einstein's spiritual successors, and it's very cool.
A spiritual successor.
A spiritual successor. We can even get into that those terms if we want.
I hope so, because we are joined by none other than Ford Foundation physics professor and affiliate professor of mathematics at Brown University, Dr. Sylvester James Gates. But we just call you Jim.
Yeah? Please, please,
yeah, Jim
please.
Gates. And his latest book is Proving Einstein Right. Welcome to Science Rules, Jim. Very excited to have you here.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you, thank you. You know, you're talking about Albert Einstein in that sense. Most people do not know that I was asked to portray Albert Einstein. In fact, it's on YouTube. I did it for the Jewish Museum of New York about 5 years ago.
So hang on a second.
Yes,
what would
sir.
You do in character?
Well, sir, you know, I would be talking with a tiny little bit of an accent and hunching forward a little bit more than is normal for me, and it was wonderful.
Did you try to change your thought process to sort of think, how would Einstein be thinking and reacting in this situation?
Well, I didn't have to change it because it turns out that in 2005, we physicists all over the world celebrated Albert Einstein in something called the Einstein World Year of Physics. That year, I gave 37 talks on 6 continents about Albert Einstein. I had read extensively, had an Albert Einstein library. So it wasn't that I had to change my thought. I just had to remember what I read.
So that's all kind of jammed in your brain somewhere.
It really is. It actually changed my views profoundly of who and what Albert Einstein was.
Wow. So you had one view of Albert Einstein and it changed. What is it that changed?
Yes. So the first time I ever seriously engaged Albert Einstein was when I was 16 years old. I was taking a physics course in high school. I had this super tremendous teacher named Mr. Freeman Coney, and I learned special relativity when I was in 11th grade.
Wow.
And so I was just overwhelmed that human minds had the capacity to think thoughts like that. So that went along for a long time in my life, that Albert Einstein was just this amazing, almost superhuman, superhero guy out here, you know, forging a path through science. When I got to my 30s and 40s, I found out even more about the guy, that he was an outspoken representative for civil rights for African Americans in the 40s and 50s, long before anybody else was saying really very provocative things. He was out there and saying them. And the thing that I learned about Albert Einstein was he was incredibly consistent in the way he worked. You know, we think of him as a genius, but he had a methodology for how he got to be a genius. His work in 1905, which we're celebrating, started in his mind 10 years earlier when he was 15 years old. And so his greatest contributions all come out of this, what he called a distillation of common sense. And that was one thing. The other thing I came to understand about him was he was not this figure beyond humanity, that he had his foibles. I learned about his personal life, which was quite messy. I learned that...
What makes your personal life messy? Women?
In his case, yes.
Yeah.
In his case, very much yes.
If you may just say yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So that started changing my view. And then finally, at the end of the day, what just sort of happened is I've been doing physics since I got my PhD in 1977. I've known some of the world's greatest physicists. I've interacted with Stephen Hawking, for example. First time I met him was 1980. Last time I saw him
He got to meet you, okay?
I was a young kid. There's actually a picture that people often find online of me at Cambridge in 1980. I'm standing up right behind Stephen, who's sitting in a chair.
Yeah, there's a lot of you on the internet, in a good way.
Thank you.
Yes.
But so at the end, watching these great physicists of my generation and thinking about Albert Einstein, I started to get confused about things that other people are not confused about. So, for example, one of the things that I have been given to thinking recently is that genius is actually not a noun, it's a verb. And because it's kind of a complex set of interactions that define genius. And genius is not a constant state of mind. There are some people who can perform these extraordinary leaps of imagination, intuition, sort of more than others, but nobody does it.
Hold on.
All.
So I'd love to hear your definition of genius, or sort of what those components are.
Yeah, yeah. So this is something someone asked me maybe 15 years ago, and I came up with the following. Genius is the ability to create order and form out of seeming chaos and ignorance and darkness. And that order and form can be not just in math or physics. It could be in dance, where you have a genius performing sculpting space, because that's what dancers do with their bodies, is they basically sculpt the space around them. You can have it in music. So genius is quite ubiquitous. It's not just about science.
So hang on. This, I think, we'll start right there.
Uh-oh.
And we'll take a question, because I think this question will, it's part of what you're talking about. Elijah, are you out there?
Yeah.
Where are you calling from?
Lexington, Kentucky.
Kentucky.
Fabulous.
Excellent.
Beautiful, beautiful part of the world. What is your question for Dr. Gates?
So I was wondering why you thought Albert Einstein was the greatest scientist, or why he is overrated? Because I think he's a good scientist. However, I just think he is a little overrated at the end of the day.
Well, first of all, I've never said I thought he was the greatest scientist. But however, I don't think he was overrated either. If you delve deeply into what he was able to do, because of Albert Einstein, we know our universe had a beginning about 13.7 billion years ago. In the time since then, amazing transformations of matter, energy, space, and time have occurred. We get a part where the universe first assembles atoms. When it's 370,000 years old, the universe takes its own baby picture, and we can see that to this very day. It's something called the cosmic microwave background. And yet, in all this transformation of matter, energy, space, and time, and miraculous wonders, the universe creates exactly one copy of you, as far as we can tell. That speaks to a kind of preciousness for every single human being. No other scientist gave us such a view of our reality.
Wow. Yeah,
that's wow.
That is a wow moment.
That's pretty cool. So Elijah, thank you, man.
Thank you. That was a great question. So what was it that was so unusual about Einstein? I mean, you were touching on this before a little bit about, you know, what it was about his thought process that was different than the way other scientists were thinking.
Well, the thing that I think all of us who studied him put at the top of that list was his ability to use Gedanken experiments, thought experiments, with sort of pure active mind to become so intimately familiar with Mother Nature that you can see a pathway to explain questions that other people don't even know are there.
But here's my understanding that Einstein was thinking, wait a second, let's say that the speed of time is not constant, and then let's just do the algebra. Let's just say this rate is not constant, something that would never occur to anybody. I mean, we have the expression time flies. We have the expression time drags on, but that it actually, the rate at which it goes by could change is pretty amazing.
Well, I love the image of, like, what happens if you catch up with a beam of light? What do you see?
And that was his question at age 15.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man, but, I suck.
Yeah, and gravity also affects the flow of time. So, like, the time on the surface of the Earth and the time at the center of the Earth are slightly different.
And the time up where your GPS satellites that drive your navigation apps is different. And that's something that that had to be worked out if you were going to actually design the GPS. So the practical benefit of Albert Einstein is that we have all these navigation apps.
Well, we have everything.
But one of the things, you know, we're talking about the transformative moment for me. It was in my thinking about Einstein, but it came from looking at other great geniuses who are alive now. Geniuses have intellectual blind spots.
Such as, does anybody want a name, or is this?
I don't want to embarrass any of my friends, because I actually know some of these folks. But geniuses can have intellectual blind spots.
I say all the time, I meet you. You might be the exception, but I've spent time with Nobel laureates.
Yeah, me too.
These are not people you want teaching kindergarten.
Generally not.
They're just, it's a different skill.
It is.
So go ahead. Geniuses have blind spots.
Geniuses have blind spots. And that, to me, was an amazing discovery I made quite young as a scientist. And then I said, oh my goodness, that means there's hope for me to be successful. Because if I can get in a blind spot, I'm going to do something no one else can find.
Science Rules will be right back.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries plus napkins plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
You're listening to Science Rules.
You know, talking more about me, I'm a mechanical engineer. We got three dimensions. We have four. We have time, okay? I worked on four-dimensional autopilots for a while. You want to get there when you're allowed to get there, not before, and
right,
so on.
Right.
All right. But you guys, and by you guys, I mean theoretical physicists, have this whole other thing. We're going to add 5, 6, 7, 11 dimensions. So what are you talking about?
And why? String why theory, are,
right?
Why
so
are you doing it?
We're trying to understand the nature of the universe.
Right.
I remember being amazed as an engineer working in the early days of integrated circuits. And the whole thing was to get down to 30 molecules. If you could make a silicon wafer, 30 molecules thick. Okay, first of all, you have to believe in molecules.
That's
you have to
right.
believe that there is such a thing.
Yeah.
You have to believe that they interact. You have to believe that there's electrons and so on. There's a lot of evidence for it, right? But then you go, well, the molecules are made of atoms, and the atoms are made of neutrons and protons, and they're made of quarks.
And the quarks are made of...
The quarks might be made of something. Well, then what happened? Okay, so what are you working on? What is string theory? Can you just Well, the show's only about 40 minutes.
That's so okay. I've explained string theory in 30 seconds before, so I'm going to fall back on that explanation. Here we go. You want to start a clock?
30 seconds. Starting now.
Okay. So take a yardstick, cut it into 10 equal pieces, throw away 9, keep 1. You go for something as long as yardsticks or something that is about the span of your hand. Take that object, cut it into 10 equal pieces, throw away 9, keep 1. You can get down to the size of your thumbnail, essentially. How many times do you have to do that to get to the atom? The answer turns out to be 10. How many times do you have to do that to get to the nucleus? The answer turns out to be 15. So we've been asking the question, if you keep doing this process and get down to, say, 35 times, is there anything left in the universe reasonable? If we think the answer is yes, we call them strings. They're like filaments.
Oh, there you go.
Wow.
Well, thank you for listening, everyone.
Okay. All right.
That's our show.
So pretty much we've got everything answered now.
Hang on.
Yes.
A filament.
Yeah.
So so far, I think a lot of people, especially people who listen to this show, are all about particles.
Yes.
Right? We have a molecule, we have an atom, we have proton, neutron, electron, and then we've got, let's say, quarks. We got photons.
And exotic things. We got photons and neutrinos.
We got photons. We got some tau mesons. All right. So we're going to go from particles to filaments.
Sure. And so if you do the mathematics, it's pretty straightforward. However, most people in the world don't do mathematics. They think in other other terms. So let me try it this way. If you think about a filament, it's like a violin string. What can you do with a violin string? How about plucking it? If you pluck a violin string, you can actually produce many different notes. So the particles that we see in fundamental physics are to the string as notes are to a violin string. Namely, they're the vibrations of the string that look like particles to us.
So all the particles are made of the same essential thing, this string, and it's the vibration mode that makes it one thing or another.
That's exactly
okay. But a filament or a string of what? This is where, a lot of people get stuck.
Because often people like to say, a string is a collection, is a filament, perhaps made of energy. No, that's not right because you see,
say that again. What is it not?
It is not a filament, is not energy.
A string is not energy.
Yeah, which is a mistake I often see in popular discussions of string theory.
Well, it just seems intuitively like it would be.
Well, that's because energy is the output of the string, not the input. That's why you can't say that strings are energy. Energy is what comes from strings. So if you ask a question, what is a string, the only answer that I can tell you is A, I know it's a mathematical entity, and B, it seems to have the property of describing the equations that we physicists have been going back and discovering back to the time of Newton.
Oh, so hang on. Is light energy?
Light carries energy, and it's a particular vibration of a string.
And so a photon would be a vibration of a string. A
particular mode of vibration of a string.
Okay. Is it a string? Is it quantized like that? Because one of the charming amazo things, speaking of Albert Einstein, is that light is quantized, that it's in particles, it's in discrete packets.
We have been struggling with the idea of quantizing string theory since its birth, and guess what, guys? We haven't succeeded yet.
That's a relief. No, because I'm not in your league, but I listen to it, and it seems incomplete.
That's the deepest question in string theory, and it's a question that's so deep, in my opinion, most theorists haven't actually figured out that question. There are only a couple of people in the world I know who have been wrestling with the idea of quantizing strings. One of them is Edward Witten at Princeton. Another is someone whose PhD thesis I supervise, he's no longer so young, but a professor named Barton Zwieback, who is at MIT. And a few other people have worked on the quantization of strings, but no one has a complete story there yet.
Okay, so hang on. Light is quantized. We can measure a packet of light.
You can measure a packet of energy carried by a photon.
So a packet of energy carried by a photon.
And that's part of what Einstein did in 1905. That's part of what he got in
photoelectric. That's what he actually
got the Nobel Prize for that. Yeah, not for relativity.
Yeah, you can't get a Nobel Prize for a theory. It has to be a discovery.
Not for a piece of mathematics
alone.
Yeah.
So hang on. So the photon is a manifestation of something more fundamental.
Yes.
And that more fundamental thing behaves in some ways like a pluckable string.
The mathematics of the object are like the mathematics of a pluckable string.
Cool. Okay. We're getting somewhere.
All right. Now.
But let me surprise you folks, perhaps.
Nothing
you've said has been surprising, so I'm waiting for the surprise.
Another manifestation of a different vibration string is space itself.
Yeah, so...
Okay, you know, we have a caller.
We have a caller.
Okay. I think we have Brian on the phone. Brian, are you there?
I am.
Brian, excellent. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Bangor, Maine.
Bangor, Maine, here in the United States. Fabulous.
I was just in Augusta about 2 months ago.
Oh.
Coincidence?
I doubt
actually,
it.
Yes.
Actually, no.
So go ahead, Brian. What's your question?
So my question is this is something I've been thinking about since I graduated high school back in 2012. I have been told since I was a little kid that space is a vacuum. And space being a vacuum means that, you know, to my understanding, nothing can exist in there. But yet we have many, many particles that explode, supernovas, all kinds of things that happen out in the vastness of space. So to sum that question up, where does that material and matter go?
It's a great question. How can something be in nothing?
There are two ways that we know that space is not a nothing. One of the ways is actually LIGO and gravitational waves, because nothing can't make waves.
In okay, fact, explain. Oh, LIGO and gravitational waves. That's very straightforward. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah. No, okay. can you expand on that?
Of course we know, but we're just asking you if you know, just to make sure.
Well, actually, I've been watching LIGO since 1985 when it was just being developed, and it's been wonderful.
So LIGO, everybody, is...
Laser Interferometry Gravitational Wave Observatory.
Yeah. It's two giant facilities... one in Louisiana, one in Washington State.
Correct.
Watches for
tiny vibrations.
Ripples in space-time.
Exactly. That's what they were designed to do. So that is probably the most forceful piece of evidence I can give you that space is not a nothing. But in fact, the Greeks actually knew this. If you go back and study Greek philosophy, you'll see that one of the arguments about space being an absent is you can't move through nothing. So it's got to be something. The other part of the answer I would tell you is because of quantum mechanics, we know that even if you try to take all the particles out of a region of space, there are quantum fluctuations. And so something appears there as if spontaneously, perhaps for an incredibly short time, but it is not just empty. So we know of no perfect vacuum in nature if you look at quantum field theory.
Brian, is that helping?
So space is not is not the word vacuum is more of a laboratory idea, right?
It is, and it's typically
suck all the molecules.
That's exactly the issue about sucking the stuff out of a region. That's where we talk about of a vacuum. Typically, it's sucking air molecules out of a region. But when you go out in space, like I said, you can't stop quantum mechanics, so it can put stuff there when you're not looking.
Strings, energy. Something, energy manifested by something else that right now, today, we're calling strings.
Strings, that's right.
Yeah. Now, wait, you were starting to say, before we got Brian on the line, you were starting to say that strings might not just be creating particles, but they might be creating space itself?
That is correct.
So I feel like this is the time to start to understand what you mean by that.
Well, I meant exactly that. That space and time, since Einstein teaches us they're sort of the same thing, those two are vibrations of strings. And so the model of the string is that it is the ultimate author of everything in our universe, including space and time.
Before we get deeper into this, we have a science class.
We have a science class.
Science class on the line. And I feel like we need to have this science class on the show, too.
Yes, ooh. Yes. I'm sorry to go off on a thing there, science class.
I'm sorry, Bill. Didn't mean to set you off.
No. I think it's part of the charm. Correct me if I'm wrong. So, Jason, are you the science teacher?
I am.
What grade are you teaching, or what class are you teaching?
I have 11th and 12th grade AP physics students.
All right.
So, did they call you Jason, or do they call you Mr. something?
Or Doctor?
Mr. Doherty.
Mr. Doherty. So, Mr. Okay. Doherty and your class, you have a question?
We do. I was actually going to talk about LIGO today with the kids. And then I saw your tweet about Einstein and relativity. So the question we came up with is, like, we know gravity waves is one of the last big discoveries.
Got to say, if we're trying to be disciplined, it's gravitational waves. I'm not joking.
Yes, yeah.
No, when we're talking about climate change and trying to understand the patterns that seem to make storms linger. Those are connected with what we believe, what were generally called gravity waves. So I'd just like to get in the habit of gravitational waves. Take it,
yes,
Mr. Doherty.
Bill and I actually halted the production of his TV show because somebody said
just said
gravity waves instead of gravitational waves.
Words include more than they leave out. But
sorry, back to you and your class.
Gravitational waves, take it.
I was just corrected by Bill Nye. I love it. One of my dreams just come true.
We're just trying to get in the habit of not lumping the two things together. Go ahead.
So gravitational waves, we know that was one of the last major predictions that Einstein's general theory of relativity had that had been left to be proven still, and that was proven just a few years ago. Are there any other major predictions that Einstein's theory of relativity has that we're still searching for?
That is fantastic. What a great question. And we have the guy to answer it.
Well, I'm not sure if I'm the guy.
Yeah, you are.
We have a guy.
That's
go
right.
ahead,
Jim. Mr. Dougherty, I'm sorry to disappoint you in your class, but as to my awareness, that was the last big question. There is one tiny question, however, which we have not answered, and that is, are these gravitational waves like light waves and carry energy in quanta? Because that we don't know yet.
Yeah, are you guys, put another way, are you all going to find a graviton?
That's exactly equivalent, Bill. I'm a Star Trek fan. It'll be like, we have seen the gravitons they talk about on Star Trek.
And then if you see a graviton, what will that tell you?
Well, first of all, it'll give us a lot of confidence that we're not crazy.
Okay, that's good.
That's something you always have to do, a self-check with nature. And science is all about a conversation with nature. And the nature is so complicated, it's easy for us humans to get it wrong. So we need to have verification. So that's one thing. It's like knowing gravitons there, we get verifications. The other thing then will once we know that, it's going to be a really big push to say, what is the mathematics of these quantized energy-carrying gravitons? Because that mathematics doesn't exist completely.
Right. We have no quantum theory of gravity.
We have no complete theory of quantum gravity. So it will
push
the
theorists.
Well,
we don't have the theory of everything yet.
That's right. We don't.
So Mr. Dougherty's class, who knows what the future is for you all? It's amazing.
Stick around for more science rules after this.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Science Rules is back.
Hey, we've got another caller on the line.
Yeah, and you're who's calling?
We have Isabel. Isabel, are you there?
Hello.
Oh, yeah. Isabel, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Where are you calling from?
New York, New York.
Ah, the town's so nice, they named it twice. And what is your question?
So I was just wondering, since you're on the topic of Einstein, you know, if you had any opinions on your contemporaries, if you thought that there is like a modern day Einstein or who the next Einstein is going to be.
Well, predicting the next Einstein is a losing proposition. Mother Nature and time and the universe and providence and all these mysterious words, only that in that domain could one make the prediction. So I can't predict the next Albert Einstein.
Well, there is a question people ask, you know, is the way science is done today, could there even be another Einstein? Is it so complicated and distributed?
I absolutely think there could be. Because if you look at the way Einstein actually worked, his genius is not that he was a better mathematician than the people around him, because he wasn't. There were people who were far more accomplished mathematicians. In fact, even his great theory of gravity probably was invented a few days or weeks earlier than he did by a mathematician named David Hilbert. So that wasn't his strength. His strength was this crystalline perception of how the math and the reality could be tied together. And that is an ability that is almost like someone who can do art. So that's what we need to solve our problems, not someone who's like a super computer who can just go ahead and just take the math and bang on tables and get answers to come out. We need someone that has that act of crystalline clarity.
But is there anybody who you talk to today, or when you're with them, you think, oh, this person has some of that quality of mind?
There are numbers of people I know. I think most people in my community will tell you that the most prominent and distinguished mathematical physicist of my generation is a man named Edward Witten, who the public mostly has never heard of.
You mentioned him earlier.
I did indeed. Ed, I've known Ed since 1975. He's a friend. His family and my family have done some things together when my kids were little and his were little. But he is absolutely, his mind is just, the first time I met Ed, I was afraid I had chosen the wrong business. And it wasn't until I figured out geniuses have blind spots, I said, I'll be okay.
Because he was the one who came up with some of the fundamental ideas of string theory.
Absolutely he is. Absolutely.
So we have another caller. So thank you, Isabel.
Thank you.
Someone's calling from overseas. Who is it?
Hello. My name is Jos. I am calling from Belgium.
Ah, great.
Oh, where in Belgium?
In Belgium, Wateren.
The best food there is. The best food there is.
So,
yes, take it.
It is. We do have good food. Now, I saw your tweet on Einstein and is he the greatest scientist? And with regards to relativity and our inability to exceed the speed of light, are we going to be able to create a different type of propulsion system that sidesteps the speed of light restrictions such that we can actually travel to other stars in a human time frame?
Well, that's a great question.
Now you're talking.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I have to give you the answer that I've told people for years. In order to travel faster than the speed of light, Albert Einstein, at some level, is going to have to be falsified because it's his math that puts that speed limit on us. The first person who finds the alternative version of mathematics that's consistent with the universe, that will then go and say, gee, I can build a starship. That person is going to have to be working on something like the equations of string theory. And since none of us have a complete picture even of that, I have no way of answering your question.
Well, what about wormholes? That's the sort of like the hand-waving answer that always comes up in the science fiction stories.
Yeah.
Is that a physically real thing?
It turns out that if you look deeply in the mathematics of wormholes, there's this one sort of problem. It's negative energy. In order to create wormholes consistent with the laws that Albert Einstein gave us, you have to have this stuff that's negative energy. We're not even sure what it is, or we certainly don't know whether it exists. And so if you had some way to tell me you had negative energy, I would say, fine, sign me up for your starship tomorrow.
So hang on. This would be a situation where energy would not be there, that somehow energy could leave a space or a space-time, and there'd be a place in space-time with no energy, sort of?
It's a little bit more complicated than that, but the closest things that general relativity give us that allow us to construct wormholes demand a form of energy. You know, it's math, right? It's just math. So you look at the math and you look at what it says and you want this configuration of the wormhole, you find out that the sign that you call energy has to be the one that's different from our usual sign. That's what we can tell you.
Okay, well, yeah, so here's the other thing that comes up all the time in the science fiction stories, tachyons.
Yes.
Is that a real concept? Is that a real thing?
First of all, tachyons is a real theoretical physics math concept. In fact, it is at the foundation of why strings, or technically superstrings, came into existence. The first generation of strings were actually built in the 60s. They are mathematically inconsistent because they contain tachyons. So it's a real...
And tachyon is a particle that moves backward in time?
A tachyon is a particle that has, whose mass, when you square it, is still a negative number.
Yeah, sure. Well, sure.
Right, exactly. Right.
I mean, it's the so-called imaginary number, right?
Yeah. So
my whole world, you know, in control systems, autopilots, is based on imaginary numbers, right. People.
I have a whole imaginary life, but we don't need to get into that.
Yeah. So the point is that tachyons are real, in the sense of mathematics. However, if you admit tachyons, you run into all kinds of problems like probabilities that might be negative or greater than one. So if you're going to say that quantum mechanics requires probability, you don't want tachyons.
Probabilities greater than one.
Yeah. Wow. What does that mean?
It's something to do with the New York Knicks losing.
I don't know. Yeah. So tachyons are problematic in physics.
Okay. So I think we've sort of answered your question, or at least we've answered your question as well as we can, that time travel is not possible with the physics we know, but we don't know what comes beyond.
Possible, right.
We all want to travel faster than light. We all want to go to another part of the universe at another time instantly. But So far, we still can't do it. Life sucks, and then you die.
Well, I'm actually glad that people are not going into my past and like changing, messing with causality. I'm perfectly fine with that.
Corey, do you see the clouds on the horizon?
I do. It's getting dark. I feel rain. I hear thunder. It's the lightning round.
That's exactly right, my friend. So here we go, Jim.
Okay, Jim, are you ready for lightning to strike?
We ask you questions, and our dream is that we get
a quick answer.
Yeah, that's our dream.
Let's try.
Here we go. When will we see another relativity level discovery in physics?
My guess is about 100 years.
100 years, one century. There we go. What's one thing about Einstein that most people misunderstand?
That Albert Einstein started his career talking about gravity by making an error.
By making a mistake.
Yes.
And what was that mistake?
He didn't correctly predict how light would be bent around the sun.
He predicted it incorrectly?
Yes.
But then this famous day where everybody goes and looks at Mercury.
He had a factor of two error, if I'm remembering
that
right.
That is exactly right. We explore that in our book.
Yeah. Okay, next question. What is one thing that annoys you about Einstein?
What bugs you?
The most annoying thing about Albert Einstein to me was his lack of consideration for the women in his life.
What? So he did not treat them respectfully? Or he
didn't treat his first wife respectfully at all. Nor... You should go look for some of the things his brother said about him and women. I mean, this guy was, in the modern vernacular, he was a dog.
A dog?
A dog.
Okay.
Do you have a favorite particle, subatomic particle?
My favorite subatomic particle is the super partner to the W boson. Its name is spelled W-I-N-O.
And so
the wino.
That's right. That's why it's my favorite.
And does it exist?
We don't know yet. We tried to find evidence at the LHC. So far, we've not seen anything.
So you've been looking around for winos and you just can't find them.
Unless I come to New York,
right.
I'm sure.
We have a trace percentage. Do you have a favorite force, physical force out there?
Gravitation.
That's
why is that?
Because it is a pathway to understanding the structure of everything, us, the universe, the whole thing.
Are there implications for string theory right now that are affecting us in our everyday life?
None that I know of, Bill. None
really?
That I know. Yeah.
Except you're looking for the next answer, the next secret of the universe.
Well, that's the only effect that I can identify.
Well, that is pretty good. I mean, this is something that fills me with reverence every day, and I really appreciate you taking the time to come talk with us. I have one last question.
Sure.
I want to ask you something about you.
Okay.
Now, I look at Corey, look at me. We are a product of just being born in the United States. I'm the dorkiest white guy you're ever going to meet. But you are from a little different ancestry, and you're playing in a league with a bunch of other white guys.
Yeah.
Were you working against or with a lot of racism in coming up in the world of physics?
Bill, my life has been really extraordinarily weird. My father was in the U.S. Army for 27 years, and that meant that – and I was born in 1950. And so number
one – You're a kid.
Yeah, right. That means that I had a chance to grow up in diverse communities before the word existed. Because in the 1950s, the only place diversity existed was actually in the military. That's something people don't know. So that's item number one about the weirdness of my life.
And you moved around, right?
By the time I was in sixth grade, I had been in six different schools.
All in the U.S. or overseas?
All in the U.S. I was 4 years old and living in Canada before starting school when I discovered this thing called science and became absolutely convinced at that age that that's what I wanted to do with my life. So it's very organic with me. It's not that someone pushed me into doing this. I'm the first person in my family to go to college, and I got two bachelor's degrees in 4 years from MIT and then a PhD 4 years later. I was a postdoc at Harvard for 3 years, and then I went to Caltech. I just flew in here from Caltech yesterday, and I just found out that apparently I was the first African-American postdoc in the mathematics, astronomy, and physics division they ever hired at Caltech. So for me, I try to tell people, yes, first of all, there's in my experience of the United States, the issue of race has always been present. Race was designed in this country to designate those who would receive benefits and those who would suffer degradations. That was in our initial concept of race in this country. Now, we've moved on to some degree, although it's a struggle still. But for me personally, I've always had this sense that there's something about the way my life was put together that made me a physicist, that made me passionate about doing physics, and that there was a question out there in physics that had my name on it. And all I had to do was try to figure out what that question was and try to come up with the answer. But I'm absolutely convinced that the reason diversity is important is because different people are going to come up with different ideas. It's just like in music, you know. I love classical music, Bill, but I also love jazz and R&B, right? And without people thinking differently, we don't get R&B. So we're richer musically because you do that. I have a very strong suspicion that science will be richer when more people like me practice it.
So I say all the time, by way of example, half the people in the world are women and girls. So let's have half the scientists and engineers be women, for crying out loud.
It will be different.
And the other thing that, I mean, I never dealt with what you have dealt with your whole life, but people are more alike than they are different. That's just all there. I mean, as different as we seem to be, it's literally skin deep. And so I just think the future is bright, but man, we have a long way to go. It's good. Your leadership.
Yeah. Well, you were talking before about blind spots. And I think, you know, first of all, if you want to fill those blind spots, you want people with as many different ways of looking at the world as possible. But also, I mean, race is itself a blind spot for a lot of people.
Yeah. But one of the marvelous things about science is that it tells us something philosophers have said for millennia, that we're all actually related. We know this from our genome. To me, the fact that I know that you are literally a relative of mine.
That's, yes.
This is just like mind-blowing.
Oh, man. Everybody, we all have a common ancestor. Exactly.
And everyone is very closely related.
Yes.
The genetic diversity of Homo sapiens is tiny.
Exactly. So
we got squeezed. Squeezed through this evolutionary keyhole.
It was a valley of death. There was a time when almost all humans on the planet died. Those survivors were our ancestors.
Here we are, people.
And hey, let's make something good of this.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Dr. Gates, for taking
the
time.
What a fabulous discussion.
Jim, it's just been cool. Before we go, let's promote your book. The name of the book is?
Proving Einstein Right, co-authored with Kathy Pelletier, a novelist. And it's not your usual science book. It's actually written for every person, not just for those
like listeners of Science Rules. Yeah. I don't think it's going to be 100 years. I think you guys are going to come up with something very cool with string theory before that. So everybody, thank you for listening. This has been a fantastic episode about string theory and the nature of the cosmos. I'm Bill Nye.
I am Corey S. Powell.
And remember, when it comes to the relativistic, filament-bound nature of the universe, science rules. If you like Science Rules, and I hope you do, please take a moment to rate and review it in Apple Podcasts and on Stitcher. It helps us out, helps other people learn about the show so that they too can turn it up loud. Thank you. Be sure to look at my socials, you know, the gram, the booking of face, the tweeting, for when to call into the show. I'm at Bill Nye on all those things. And meanwhile, if you'd like to leave us a voicemail of all things, give us a call at 201-472-0785, 201-472-0785. Science Rules is produced by Claire Rawlinson and the very same Corey S. Powell.
Yo.
Our engineer today is Jared O'Connell. Casey Halford mixed this episode and composed our original theme music. Special thanks to Jordan Bell and Ashley Warren. Greetings. Daisy Rosaro is our executive producer. Chris Bannon is the CCO, the chief content officer at Stitcher. And at Stitcher, as you all know, science rules.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's Mix and Match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.